I do invite you to turn with me in the Scriptures to the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians as we continue this our study through the book of Corinthians. If you're visiting with us, we've been going through this all year, and we've really camped out for a longer time than normal in this 13th chapter because it is such a monumental chapter, and it is a chapter that there's so much in. To look at. And so this morning we come to the middle of the chapter, and we come to actually just one verse. As we prepared to look at this verse, it made me think of some things that happened from time to time in our household, and especially between Amy and me. From time to time, Amy will come up to me and she'll do something silly, which I know none of y'all can believe. But she'll do something silly, and she'll take her hair and maybe she'll put it on the top of her head like a carrot top, and she'll come up and she'll say to me, "Would you still love me if I look like this?" Or she'll make some face and crazy face and say, "If I always look like this, and would you still love me?" And of course, my answer to her is always, "No, I wouldn't." You know, and now, if that were true, if it were true that I wouldn't still love her, what would that tell you about my love? What would that say? Well, it's depending upon something external, right? It's dependent upon something that's superficial, that it's conditional. You might even say, well, I'm not sure you really love her at all. And you might question my love. And it's interesting to think about that, and though in a serious note, what in reality, though, do we all want to hear from the people we really care about? We want them to tell us that they love us, what? No matter what. We want them to show it to us every day, and we especially want them to show it to us on the days we've blown it and failed miserably. We want to know that it's going to last. Even when we grow old, even when we don't look like we once looked, even when we can't do the things that we once were able to do. All that to say, we desperately want love that will never end. Is that not true? We want love that will never end. Well, interestingly, in our study through 1 Corinthians, we've seen that many of the Christians in the Corinthian church were failing to love each other as they should have. There were divisions among them based upon which of the leaders they identified with most closely, based on his eloquence or based on his ethnic background or whatever it is that they kind of connected with this one, but not as much with the other one. They were quick to take offense at each other, to take each other not only to court, but to take each other to pagan courts and take their conflicts outside the church and air their dirty laundry, as it were, outside the church to try to straighten things out. We know that at times the rich were despising the poor, but not waiting upon them to eat the Lord's Supper. And then when they did show up, they despised them because they didn't have anything to contribute to the greater meal that would also be celebrated. We know that they were competing against one another and elevating themselves above each other based upon what spiritual gift they had, particularly elevating the gift of tongues. And so that's really the context of the 13th chapter. It's the conflicts within a church. And so a young church, an immature church. And so after exhorting them to desire the gifts which are of more value than tongues, Paul said that he would show them a still more excellent way. And it's the way of love. The way that is necessary for the use of our gifts to produce what they should. The way that is necessary for us to amount to really anything. The way that is necessary for any sacrifice that we might make to gain us any future reward. All that as we saw in those first three verses. Last week we learned that contrary to the way many Corinthians were living, love is patient and kind. It does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. This morning, as we go back to this, and we just go back to one verse, we're going to see what we might call the four responses of love. It's found in verse 7, and it says this. This is God's word. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Easy 4 points, right? Let's go one at a time. Love bears all things. Think about the word bears. The bearing of all things carries with it, I think, this idea of weight bearing or of really being a support. Now, if you like to watch any of the HGTV or do-it-yourself shows on television like I do, then you're used to hearing them talk in the renovation planning stages of doing what? Of taking down walls. Of asking the question of load-bearing walls. Can we take this wall down? Is it a load-bearing wall? Why? Because a load-bearing wall is a wall that carries a significant weight, a part of the weight of a structure. If you just willy-nilly go into your house and you take down a wall and you don't consider that wall and whether it carries amount of structure, your entire house might begin to sag. And then it would eventually, potentially collapse under the weight over days and weeks and months. So many times if they want to tear down a wall then and to get that open concept that they're looking for, they have to replace that wall with an I-beam, either a steel one or a wood one. An I-beam that spans that space, and then what does it do? It supports the load. It's there. The foundation is safe. It maintains the integrity of the house. Well, think about that kind of idea when you think about love bears all things. Because when Paul says that love bears all things, he doesn't mean that love supports anything that a person says or does, but he means that love continues to be there. Love continues to support the life and the existence and the well-being of the person that you truly love. Whereas what do we know happens in some relationships? Many people's support gives way at the first sign of failure, at the first sign of difficulty, the first sign of adding to your life something that they don't approve of. It was interesting, just this week I was talking to someone who was going to meet with a friend who years ago had abandoned the Christian faith for universalism, a universal teaching that basically everyone goes to heaven, all roads lead to heaven. And sadly, he reported to me that most of this man's Christian friends had abandoned him when that happened. They pulled all support, they pulled all, really, existence of his life. And therefore, with that, what did they do? All potential ability to help and influence in the future. Instead of continuing to love him, even though they didn't necessarily agree with him. Do you see the difference? Do you see the difference of love bears all things? Love, there's support that is there. But notice secondly, and notice how these continue to build, and obviously they're interconnected. He says love also believes all things. Now, once again, this doesn't mean that you believe as true or right everything that a person that you love does or says. But again, it seems to be the idea of potentially believing the best about them. Many of you are probably familiar with the story of Job in the Bible. and how he was described in the opening verses as blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. This upright, strong, incredible example of a godly man. But then the Lord allowed Job to be tested. First of all, by losing all of his possessions by marauders and all of his children by a violent storm all in one day. Can you imagine? All in one day. And then when Job maintained his faith, the Lord then allowed Job to be tested by falling ill and losing his health. And even though Job maintained that he had committed no great sin, it wasn't that he was sinless, but any great sin that warranted such hardships, do you remember how his closest friends began to treat him? They began to think the worst about him, to believe that all of his suffering had come upon him because of some major sin in his life. This is the only explanation. You must have blown it royally. In fact, his so-called friend Zophar told him in chapter 20, he said, "This is the wicked man's portion from God, the heritage decreed for him by God." This is the wicked man's portion. This is what the wicked get. And so in the end, what did they not do? They didn't believe Job. They didn't give him the benefit of the fact that they couldn't know the reason that God allowed these things to come into his life. But what did they do? They jumped to the worst possible conclusion based on the degree of his hardships. That's not love, is it? Love, on the other hand, believes the best. When a person loves another, you may describe it like this. They're not immediately cynical or suspicious, but they seek to think about the person in the best light possible. And again, it's not that they never think that the person's wrong, or that they never need to be confronted. Or yes, there's things that, hey, this happened because you did this. This is a natural consequence of your foolishness or your sin. But when they don't know better, they take, I can't remember where I read this phrase, the high path of believing. Isn't that an interesting phrase? The high path of believing. Which makes me think back to, made me think back this week of a time back in Americus. For a number of years when I was there, I attended Kiwanis, and I got to meet some different people in the community. And there was a local businessman in town that was quite a character, but he was really a generous man. And somehow, in talking, we discovered that we had both been trying to help a couple that was looking for assistance. And as we talked, though, we both admitted that we weren't sure if we were being taken advantage of. We weren't sure that everything they were telling us was on the up and up, or if they were, you know, how many people were helping them, or what the situation looked like. And for whatever reason, I told him that I would rather err on the side of mercy. And I remember him saying to me, "I like that. I like that." And as that story came back to me this week, you know, in essence, I thought, well, we were trying to believe the best about what we didn't know. Love believes all things. You see where this is going? Let's go a step further. Because in a similar way, love is also said to hope all things. And you think about this third response of love. Think about what it means to be blackballed. I think we all know what it means to be blackballed, right? Someone's blackballed when they are forever marked by something they've done or some way they've failed. Maybe it's happened to you. It's to the point that it doesn't matter how much time passes or how much you change, you can't lose that mark. You can't lose that mark in that person's eyes because you've been blackballed. In essence, the person has lost all faith and even all hope for the other person. And therefore, in their eyes, they will always be hopelessly marked because of their past, because of something they've done to you, or something they've failed to do, or something they've done to someone else or in the community. You get the idea, right? Again, think of that, this description, though. Love hopes all things. On the other hand, love refuses to lose all hope. It has hope for the future. It has hope for the future that the person can change or be changed. And as a result, that his circumstances will change. I didn't realize until I started doing more study this week that in Paul's second letter to the Corinthians, when he wrote to them, he said this: our hope for you is unshaken. Our hope for you is unshaken. For we know that as you share in our sufferings, you will also share in our comfort. Isn't that encouraging? Can you imagine someone coming up to you and saying, my hope for you is unshaken? That's what he said to them. Now, how could Paul and his companions have such hope? Well, it's because of the power and grace and love of God, right? That they had experienced. And because of the power and love and grace of God that they believed the Corinthians had experienced. And so if that's the case, if we've known the power, think about what when we say the power and grace and love of God. What is grace? Sometimes we describe it as undeserved favor. Undeserved favor. God loved us even while we were yet sinners. Christ died for us. Think about that statement, because if we've known the grace and power and love of God in our own lives, then what should be our conclusion? There are no hopeless cases. There are no hopeless individuals. There's no people that God is not able to graciously transform and deliver. And oh, would Paul be the poster boy for that? Wouldn't he? Did anybody think Paul was going to be converted? No way. And then when he even was, it took a long time for the Christians to believe it and to trust him, because he was throwing people in jail, and he's sitting there applauding when Stephen's killed for his faith. So no people. There's no people that God's not able to graciously transform and deliver. There's no circumstances so great that God can't overcome them. You know, something else I thought about is the ability to communicate this. The ability to communicate hope. I was looking back on some notes back when I went through 1 Corinthians many, many years ago, back in my days in Americus. And so it wasn't that long after the Ronald Reagan days. And I remarked in going through this, one of the things I liked about Ronald Reagan was the belief and hope that he conveyed about our country's future. You remember his ability? If you're old enough, you young people have no idea, I know. But he had a great ability to speak. And he had a great ability to express optimism and hope about the future. In fact, it endeared him to many, and it made it hard for people to dislike him. Even people who didn't line up with him politically. because of that hope. And I thought, I don't know that I really expressed that. And as a believer, wow. And a believer within the relationship with other believers, and a believer within the relationship of the church of Jesus Christ, should we not be full of hope? Love hopes all things. See how powerful that is? And of course, then finally, love endures all things. And you can see how this list of love's responses, that it builds on one another. Because love bears, believes, hopes through all things, it also naturally endures through everything. And this is an interesting word, endure, that's translated from the Greek, because it's used to describe how soldiers would hold a key position at all cost. You know, they would endure everything that came their way from the enemy in order to what? Not lose that position. They were going to stand there to the very end. And so if you think about a soldier with a city coming into attack, what would he not do? If he's going to endure, he's not going to abandon it no matter how hard the physical conditions. He's not going to abandon it no matter how big the size of the army that comes up against the walls. He's not going to abandon it to the threat of death itself. And so love is described here as enduring everything, every difficulty that would threaten the relationship. And in fact, again, as we look at the Apostle Paul, he writes in his second letter to the Corinthians, he writes to them how the heart of him and the companions that were with him, how their heart is wide open to the Corinthians. It's wide open. This is how much they love them. And then he says that they've commended themselves as servants of God and their message in every way. And then that's when he gives this great list. First of all, by great endurance, in afflictions, hardships, calamities, beatings, imprisonments, riots, labors, sleepless nights, hunger. You ever said to someone, you know, show me that you really love me? Did Paul show that he really loved the people he was called to minister to and share the gospel with? What would you say? No doubt. Because of what? He endured all these things. But without love, what happens? Someone abandons a relationship as soon as it gets hard. As soon as it requires something that they're just not willing to put up with or endure. And what do we a lot of times conclude? Well, you really loved yourself, but there's no doubt there, but don't know how much you love the other person at times. But true love, the love that God calls us to show to one another as Christians, that Greek word we've talked about in the past couple of weeks, agape love, the love that God shows to us, endures all things. Which again then points us back to who? It points us back to Jesus. It points it back to Him, because none of us has done all these things. We haven't borne all things, haven't we? We haven't always believed all things. We haven't endured all things. But Jesus did. Have you ever gone back and just thought about what He endured on the cross? Yes, the physical pain. Have you ever thought about all that was also going on at the same time? The 12 men that He had invested the last 3 years of His life in had abandoned Him. And the people He came to save crucified Him. And yet we know the story is Jesus is hanging on the cross and all these people are treating him and he's been abandoned and all these things are happening. What does he pray? Father, forgive them. And yes, these are those that are hanging him on the cross, but it really goes wider than that, doesn't it? For they know not what they're doing. They know not what they're doing. And so his own betrayal, his own abandonment, his own crucifixion couldn't stop him from loving them or loving us. And so the amazing message is Jesus has loved us with a perfect love by bearing all things, believing all things, hoping all things, enduring all things. And that's how we can know that his love is never going to end. It's not going to fail us. And isn't that what we said at the very beginning we all want? Isn't that what you want more than, would you actually honestly say more than anything else? You want to be loved, and you want to be loved forever, and you want that love to give you security, and you want that love there no matter how great you've blown it, no matter what you do tomorrow, no matter how weak you become in the future, no matter what the future holds, you want it for eternity. And there's only one place it's found. It's in Jesus Christ. And there's only one person that gives us the growing ability to show that kind of love in any kind of semblance. And that's also through knowing Jesus Christ. Because once you begin to experience that love, you begin to able to, in very imperfect ways, begin to show that love to other people. And of course, that's the mark of being in Christ, is it not? Because our hearts have begun to be changed. And why have they begun to be changed? Well, we've come to know the power and grace and love of God through Jesus Christ. And oh, that makes us look at other people so differently. And their circumstances. And all their weaknesses. And all their failures. And we can love who other people would say are unlovable. Because God's loved us when we didn't deserve to be loved at all. And He continues to love us. And He continues to support us. And He continues to believe. And He continues to hope. And He continues to endure because He's overcome all those things that have originally separated us from Him. And so we come to, that's why this is such an amazing, amazing chapter. That's why this is such an amazing thing that we're about to celebrate. Because this is a picture of love, is it not? That's put before us. That's, we're blessed to be able to feed upon by faith and receive by faith. I don't know how you walked in here today, what the state of your heart and mind was, the state of your soul. But I pray that through the Word today and through this sacrament, you would know the love of God and the love of Jesus in a deeper way. And that it would change you. And that it would secure you. And that you come back to our worship theme. You might walk out the door saying, amazing love. Oh, what a sacrifice. The Son of God was given for me. And if you believe that, you not only have the love of God, you have a love of God for eternity. And one day we're going to know it so much more intimately. because we're going to see Him face to face. Y'all think on that as we pray.